Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 284, recorded 16th of February, 2016.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Woohoo!
What do you mean?
I have to make it sound exciting.
Oh, okay.
Just one of those days is the end of a day that's been a day.
Yeah.
So we gotta say woohoo!
Because it started at 11 p.m. last night.
Yes, it did.
Okay.
Well, that was exciting. Yeah. I don't know if we're gonna talk about
no,
that. Okay.
No, I would get into that, but yeah. It was crazy.
But everything was fine. Nobody died. No pets died. Everybody's fine. We're all fine here.
Okay, let's.
Okay.
Let's see who's with us?
So, we have four people today. We have Matt in Perth, Western Australia, Juliet in Paris, France, Scott in Fort Worth, Texas, and Jeremiah in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Welcome, Aquarimaxers.
Yes, so I think we're going to start with Matt.
Yes.
He says, "Good day, Aquarimax. It's been a while since I got my Aussie on and used our national greeting." I like it when you do it. It's pretty cool.
Does Matt say Aussie? Awesome.
Oh, yeah, see, I probably said I didn't have my Aussie on, sorry. Let me try that again. Been a while since I got my Aussie on. How's that? Is that better?
I can't
do an Australian accent. I'm really bad. I think we've talked about that before. Anyways, it is as Australian as kangaroos and koalas, so my battle with the red tide still continues. I only just realized I'm actually battling the same dinoflagellates that cause gigantic sea or river-based algal blooms. So these are not the same dinoflagellates that fluoresce and that you can keep in glass jars to make your house pretty.
Well, in the sense that dinoflagellates
I should say bioluminesce.
Bioluminesce, yes. Nice, yes. I guess perhaps not the same species, but it's the same group.
These blooms are also caused by an excess of phosphate from fertilizers. Phosphate is the rate limiting step in algal reproduction.
The rate limiting step.
What does that mean?
It's a limiting factor in the speed of their reproduction.
By the time I turn off the lights each day, I can actually see new algae growth. All of the red algae has bubbles in it. On the positive side, I did a massive clean of my marine nano aquarium recently. I took out all of the coral, fish, and invertebrates. I replaced all of the sand with beautiful new white sand. I cleaned all of the algae off the side of the glass. For about 3 days, I had the perfect aquarium. 3 days. There was no algae at all on the glass. There was little algae left on the live rock, as I did not manage to scrub all of it off. I returned my sea urchin to my local fish store. Luckily, the nasty crab that kept causing problems had died before I did the strip down. I found a lot of empty snail shells, so I think a lot of those died too. All of that death would have added more phosphates into the algal hell I had been going through. To make things worse, it is summer here, and when the temperature gets above 26 degrees, the algae reproduce faster. It's 26 degrees Celsius. That's pretty warm, isn't it?
On the warm side. I don't remember the exact conversion, but
yeah. I don't have any frame of reference for that. I'm sure it's hot, though. However, I can't buy a chiller for such a small aquarium, so I've unplugged the heater. Even with that, the temperature stays on the high side. I have a thermometer on the side of the tank that I'm using to monitor the temperatures. If it does manage to get too low, I will turn back on the heater, but right now, that is a luxury I do not have. I have attached a photo pre- and post-giant clean for you to look at. It is amazing, the difference.
It is, and we'll look at that in a minute here. We should just go down and look at it.
Yeah, show me the pictures.
Okay, this is the pre-tank, the pre-photo. Okay, see all the algae on the heater and stuff?
The pink, yes.
Yeah, sorry, I'm touching it at the same time you're doing it. It's messing up the screen. See, it's algified.
And
this next picture looks more like the ocean. See, it's blue. Stuck. Oh, it's stuck!
On a positive note, I thought my sun coral, the orange one in the pictures, was dead, but today I noticed its feeding tentacles came out after dark. That is a great sign. I have bought some new corals to fill the void left by some of the recently deceased. I bought some liquid phosphate remover. Apparently it binds to the phosphate, and the phosphate then evaporates. Phosphate from the live rock will then leach back into the water to reach homeostasis again. But if I keep adding the phosphate remover, eventually I should get the phosphate down to almost zero. Something different I have noticed since my giant clean. My coral barely produce any protein anymore. I think that is because they are not under stress now. I joined a local marine aquarium club and they said that I only need to put the lights on for 8 hours a day. Have you come across that suggestion before? How long do you have your lights on for in your freshwater tanks? I also found out that I was overfeeding them. I barely need to feed them, apparently. However, I noticed that even when I barely feed them, the red algae still grows fast, which suggests that the food is coming from the live rock-embedded phosphates. I am sure that my feeding contributed to how much the phosphates have embedded, but not anymore.
Right. So it
should, about lights before
eventually
we go
read
on.
That equilibrium. Yeah, let's keep talking about the lights. So I think at most of my tanks, I put on like 10 hours a day for freshwater tanks.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to remember what we did with our marine tank when we had the I think it was more than 8, I'm pretty sure.
Was it?
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that you couldn't go with 8 if you just want to keep things limited. I mean, to a large extent, tanks these days, reef tanks where they're growing a lot of corals and so on, they're trying for the highest growth, and so they're trying to make everything ideal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it doesn't mean that you can't get a little bit, maybe slightly slower growth with tweaking the parameters a little bit. So maybe that's why. But I don't have a lot of experience tweaking the photoperiod of marine tanks. We've had marine tanks, but the only one that we really grew corals in, I think I had it on a 10-hour schedule. Pretty sure. So.
Okay. So. Sorry, the couch is squeaky. I'm having a similar issue from overgrowth in the planted aquarium. The Vallis dominate the aquarium. I like Vallis, but not in the complete saturation levels I have right now. However, I do not know how you control such a fast-growing plant. Can I only rely on continuously pruning and uprooting the plants when they get too much? Perhaps I should do a massive cutback and then buy new fast-growing plants to help have some stability. I'm hearing good things about crypts. I love the look of crypts, too.
Okay, well, I would say crypts are not particularly fast-growing, but they're nice. They're a low-maintenance plant, and I have a couple of crypts. I have 2 Cryptocorin wentis, I think the larger red form and the small green form. They're easy. They've never melted for me. I know they melt for some people.
Melt?
Yeah. Where you put them...
Like butter?
Condition changes.
They melt like butter.
And all the leaves and stems just kind of...
They
rot
like
away.
Disintegrate?
Within a couple of days.
Interesting.
But then a lot of times
it's a zombie plant.
The rhizome will come back. Yeah. So that's...
But you said they're not very fast growing?
They're not super fast growing, no.
So what would be some fast growing plants?
But there's a lot of possibilities there. You could look into Ludwigia or Rotella, or, you know, there's a lot of different ones. I think he already has some Kabomba in there in his tank, I think. There are so many stem plants, I don't even know where to go with that. But a lot of those could be possible. Vallisneria really grow very fast, and this is what I've often thought of, but I've never done, because I like them too, but they really will overtake a tank unless you trim them regularly. So something I thought of doing is in the center part of the tank, because you'd like the valves to grow along the sides and the back, because they're really tall.
Kind of tall.
You know, if they grow in the middle and the front, and in the middle, you
anything.
Can't see anything. So what I thought of doing, and I don't know if this would work or not, of putting either rockwork or driftwood kind of low down in the center part of the tank where you don't really want the valves to grow,
mm-hmm.
not really have a substrate them for to root in there, because they
so there's just not really a place for them to get on.
There. Yeah. And then, and that would be several inches high up above the substrate. You know, put that hardscape in there, and then let the valves go all around the sides. You'd still have to cut it back, because I'm sure it would send runners over that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But at least it wouldn't gain a foothold and root, and, you know, start growing as fast. Maybe you could just trim it around the edges regularly, like once a week, and that'd probably keep it from going nuts. It's only an idea. I've never tried it, but
it's a good idea.
It might be worth a shot. Yeah.
Okay. He goes on to say, My Thoricthys eleoti cichlids are still going well, although not growing much. I am feeding them the same pellets that I feed the rest of the 6-foot inhabitants right now. Do you know if I should be feeding them something else to grow faster?
Hmm. What are you feeding them exactly? What are the pellets?
I don't know.
No, I'm asking, I'm asking that.
I know.
I mean, sometimes live foods can boost things and make them grow.
Extra protein.
Yeah, but it's by no means necessary. I mean, most good pellets these days will work just fine to get a fish to grow. And I'm curious why they're not growing. That's interesting. Are they not... It seems unlikely they're not eating enough. It doesn't take a lot to feed a fish enough. So, interesting. Yeah, so, maybe you can tell us a little bit more about what's going on.
Yeah, tell us what you're feeding them. He says, all right, that is enough for now. I'm glad you enjoyed my alliteration in the previous email. Matt from Perth, Western Australia.
He won the Aquariomax Alliteration Award.
He did. It was a good one. And we've got these pictures from him here that we will put up.
Yeah, that we discussed.
See,
but we, yeah.
One of the pre-one, you see there's just that red, pink algae ooze everywhere. And then the next picture, it's all blue and clear and lovely. And it looks like a totally different tank.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
All right, good luck with the battle, Matt.
Yes. Soldier on, right?
Yeah.
Okay. It's time for that station break thingy when I tell you how you can play an active part in the Aquariomax community. If you want your questions or comments featured on the show, send us an email at info@aquariomax.com or call and leave a message at 801-477-0629. You can also subscribe to the Aquariomax YouTube channel, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
And now for a blatant but extremely brief plug.
Our ebook, The Aquariomax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods, is available on Amazon.com for $2.99. We'll go to Juliette in France, and she says, hello, Russ and Kelly. Last time I said I was worried about my betta, which suddenly seemed to develop white tips to all his fins. Well, they were all gone the next day. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, the white tips were gone.
So oh, I thought good. She meant all of her betas were gone.
Oh, no.
Like, oh, no!
The problem was gone.
The problem was gone. Okay, that's good. That's much better. I believe that after water change, that slightly lowered the temperature. He just grew a little paler, and it gave me the illusion of some kind of fin rot. One problem down. That's good. We like it when it just turns out.
Problem solves itself.
Yeah. I have now a colony of 15 very healthy, very red cherry shrimp, and yesterday spotted 5 babies. Finally, they are doing well. No more white worms on the top of their heads. No more planaria. All gone.
And she was treating with an antiparasitic.
Oh, good.
To deal with
so
that
it worked,
last
apparently.
Time I talked to her, so
yeah.
Apparently it worked well.
Excellent news. I needed to move the betta to his own quarters fast because he was a bit of a bully and hunted all the baby shrimp, but the new tank hadn't cycled after only a week. The local fish store tried to sell me some vials with special bacteria, but they cost a lot, and the owner said he didn't think they made much difference. Instead, I squeezed out a massive amount of dirty gunk from some filters, and within 2 days, my water parameters were perfect.
That's the way to do it.
Yep.
Pre-cycle.
And it was free.
Yeah.
I'd been waiting to get some Bororas brigitae for ages, but the local fish store kept receiving Bororas mera by mistake. Last week they called me to say they had received 30 that very morning, but that it would be better to wait a day before buying them to see how stressed they were. As I was going to be busy the next day, I went in that same afternoon to find a guy buying all 30 of them at once. Of course. He'd also been waiting forever for brigitae and lived just upstairs. Anyway, he was nice and let me have 6 out of his bag before he left. Oh, that was nice of him.
Yeah.
They got home looking pale gray, fins down and stressed out. By next morning, they were zipping around fiery red with dorsal fins straight up like killer whales. But the 3 captures and moves had been a lot, and they have now got a few ick spots.
Uh-oh.
I never really have issues with ick and normally treat it with salt and high temperatures, but my pygmy quarries would have hated this. So the pygmies are in with the betta, and the shrimp Bororas tank has gone up to 30 degrees Celsius and has had salt added to it. I will let you know how it works out. Let me know if that doesn't sound right. Does that sound right?
That sounds pretty good. And yeah, I wouldn't subject the corys to the salt treatment for sure, but I almost always treat ick with just heat.
And so not even salt?
Not even salt, usually. Okay. And I usually have success with that.
See, that's why we need a hot tub, because then when I feel icky, I can just get in the hot tub and I feel better.
Exactly.
She says, one word about the Brigittae. I had maras in with the shrimp and they completely ignored them. They also would only feed in the 2 or 3 top inches of the water and would never go hunting through the plants or at the bottom. They don't really even surface feed and their mouths are tiny. They never bothered even the tiniest shrimp. That's interesting.
Yeah.
The Brigittae are much more active as hunters and go through every bit of vegetation and into dark caves. They also take slightly bigger prey and will tear off bits while my maras only swallow what fits in their mouths. The Brigittae will not mess with small juvenile shrimp, but with a newborn I would be wary and provide many hiding places of moss in order to protect them if you house them together. It's funny how closely related species behave so differently. I had pure endlers that would rip off strands of hair algae and eat it, but none of the hybrids would touch it.
See, it is a fascinating thing, really, how different such closely related species can be. And even within the species, a lot of fish will be very different in terms
just
of their...
just individuals.
Like, bettas are a good example. When I've had bettas that are so relaxed that you put a snail in with them, or 10 snails, or whatever, they have snails in with them, and they just, oh, love and peace. Everybody's cool, and nobody gets damaged.
Happy.
But then I've had bettas, it doesn't matter what kind of snail it is. You know, you think of Malaysian trumpet snails as pretty tough, hard to kill, little tanks, and they've got the little operculum they can close off the shell with, and bettas wouldn't be able to really get at them. I've had some bettas go after and mercilessly rip them apart.
Wow.
They somehow get in there and rip the snail out and kill it. So it can happen.
They're just
and
so
I've
different.
Seen bettas on both ends of the spectrum.
So the local fish store had green neon borerass too, which a lot of people are looking for, but I would never trust these guys with shrimp. They're like borerass pit bulls and have bigger mouths. So anyone who says borerass are safe with shrimp should maybe check their personalities first. They're not all the same.
Right. So not every species is okay.
And then she says, I would love some tips on treating ick on corys, just in case they got it. They don't like salt. Also, bettas, who I have heard can be sensitive to meds, just in case for future reference. I have a bottle of Punctol Ultra, but haven't dared use it yet. Is this stuff okay with snails?
Okay. Well, let's see. I've had pygmy corys, but I've never had them with ick, and so I've never done the temperature thing, although I did lose a bunch of pygmy corys to a heater incident where the heater went a little too high and killed them all, so they are definitely sensitive to extra heat. Who can give us some... Does anybody have any tips on that with pygmy corey specifically and ick? And then... With bettas, I wouldn't worry about heat. I would take a few days and go up to 86 degrees and leave it there until the ick's gone. I wouldn't worry about that. Bettas can take it. And then Punctol Ultra, I've never used it, but I looked up some indications of it on the internet and so on, and it says the company had some text that said it can be bad for invertebrates. It specifically mentioned shrimp, didn't say snails, but I would be careful.
Careful is always
probably
good.
Probably around the side of caution, not use it. But
okay.
It sounds like
hopefully the corys don't get it, though.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. We have... Who is this? This is Jeremiah next, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And he was having trouble getting the emails to go through, too. So I don't know, you know, if anybody's having trouble trying to get an email through to us, send it through on Facebook.
Yeah. Or do the Google voice message or
yeah,
something.
Those are good too.
Both of those will work.
And let us know that the email didn't work.
Or the Aquariumax contact page also works. The problem, I don't understand why it's not working. I've had it get through
it
for some people and not for others.
It has a computer gremlin.
And WebGuru John sent a message from to info@aquariumx.com, it worked fine, and I've had several people send messages to info@aquariumx.com, and it worked fine, but then other people it's not working for, and I don't know why. So in the meantime, maybe if you try it once and it doesn't work, then try one of those other methods of contacting us.
So he just copied and pasted his email into a Facebook comment. So he says, first I wanted to say, as far as the giant land snails, that is too relevant. And then we were talking about this last week with Sarah and Juma.
And what he means is, that is too relevant.
Oh, Sarah, I don't remember exactly what we said.
Okay, because we were talking about the snails and stuff. And
one of us said,
and it doesn't really relate to aquariums, but...
So that is too relevant. Terrestrial snails are related to aquatic snails, which live in aquariums. Boom! Mic drop! Also, as an amateur verinerd, he says verinus plus nerd. And what's verinus?
That's monitor lizard.
Oh, okay.
That's the genus of
monitor lizards. Oh, okay. I am jealous of having monitor lizards in the backyard. But not jealous of the monkeys. They are far too loud for me.
I'm kind of jealous of the monitor lizards, too.
Yeah, not so much the monkeys.
No.
We have ravens in our backyard this winter, and I love them.
They're fun.
They're gorgeous.
And they eat the walnuts and the pecans.
And they're interesting.
And apples.
Yeah, so nothing gets wasted. Like the stuff up on the high branches that we couldn't reach.
They can reach.
You know, it was just windfall, kind of past human consuming.
They were happy to eat it.
So, yeah.
Whatever we couldn't get.
It was fun. So, he says, oh yes, not jealous of the monkeys. Anyway, I decided it was time to pull the plug on my dirted tank. The plants have been dying off, and I am certain the nutrients were all gone. I ripped the plants out and took out all the dirt and rinsed the gravel to try to get as much of the dirt out as possible. This was a very messy job, which my back is still upset about. I'm sorry for your back.
We do feel your pain.
Yes, frequently. I will never do another dirted tank until we have a backyard to rinse an aquarium out in. That is a big deal.
That has been such...
You need an outside hose. Yeah, you can't rinse all that stuff down the sink.
I know exactly where you're coming from. When we lived in our last place, we didn't really have a backyard where we could rinse out the tanks. Mm. And it's nice here. I just come out in the back and do it.
Yeah.
So I know what you mean. Still not always nice on my back, but it's nicer.
At least it's nicer on the sink.
That too.
Yep. He says, thank you for the well wishes as well. And my wife, Liz, also says thanks. I really suggest to other aquariumaxers also not bother with a dirted tank unless they have a backyard as well.
Yeah, it makes sense.
He says, sadly, another guppy passed away, so I am now down to only two fish, single neon and a lonely guppy. On the upside, they seem to be loving the roominess of 10 gallons each. When they eventually pass on, I will likely get a single goldfish. Liz likes the black moor type. I also
We do, yes.
It's one of
our favorite
Wendell.
Types.
Wendell the Wet. When we had our pirate-themed goldfish names. I also want to make a suggestion for anyone using a Python water changer. When you tank the aerator off the sink, make sure it does not end up in the garbage disposal. Starting the day off with a call to maintenance was annoying and embarrassing. Thankfully, the garbage disposal wasn't ruined. That's good, because those are expensive.
Yeah, and I hope your Python aerator wasn't ruined too.
Yeah.
Although those are pretty easy to replace if you have to. Online they're like $3. But still, it's a pain.
Oh, and he has like a technical comment that we need to deal with. He says, also as an aside, I've been noticing that the audio on the intro and the outro is a bit loud, like the sound you'd get from blown out speakers. I'd suspect my headphones, but it only happens for the intro and outro of your show, and it happens regardless of which of my too many headphones I am using.
Okay, well,
so we gotta
figure that out. Yeah, when I send out the next edit, I will try to get that fixed.
So thank you for pointing that out to us.
Yeah.
We can fix it.
Oh, and he also said the goldfish.
He had like a PS later. He said someone at his local fish store said his tank was too small for a goldfish.
And 20-gallon tank is pretty small for goldfish. I mean, it can be done really with one goldfish in 20 gallons, especially if it's a fancy goldfish like a blackmore, but it's not really the best situation, so I can understand why they would say that. We've really found that we can't do any more than two goldfish in our 37 gallon.
Yeah.
So that's about right, you know. We can't do more than two. So, and I would say it'd probably be better with one, but two seems to work. So, But I think we're still stretching it a little bit, but we do huge water changes every week, so
that's
why we get away with it. And overfilter it and all that.
Yeah. So. Keeps it pretty clean. Okay. We have one more.
We do.
We have Scott in Fort Worth, Texas. He says, good afternoon, Russ and Kelly. My Wallstad tank is going strong, and I'm adding shrimp a bit at a time. I found these beautiful red Reilly shrimp that are basically a variant of the red cherry shrimp, but have red splotches on an almost translucent body. They look a bit like crystal red shrimp. I hope to breed them, but could have some mutts because I also added some lemon and Bloody Mary shrimp to the mix. Also, Neocaridina. Mm-hmm. I have a variety of snails most people would probably hate, but they are voracious algae eaters and aerate the soil substrate, so for me they have a certain functional beauty about them. I do have a big question, though. I've never been successful with shrimp, but as I've also never gone to these lengths for a plant and shrimp-only tank. What advice can you offer that will help me out with these guys? I really hope to see a huge colony of shrimp in this tank someday. I imagine brightly colored shrimp swarming green and red plants will be absolutely beautiful.
Okay.
And he also sent a short video,
which we watched, and it has his nice setup.
Shrimp tank.
I like the setup. It looks cool, the way he's planted and everything. And he's got some beautiful shrimp in there, too. I would say a couple of things come to mind. Success with shrimp and other things. And with this tank, one of the principles of Wallstad tanks is that typically the fish load is fairly high to make sure there are enough nutrients for the plants. So a fairly high bio load is not terribly compatible with shrimp. I mean, at least at first, but even when you've got a lot of shrimp, the bio load in the tank is going to be a lot lower than if you had a corresponding number of fish. Even if they're similar in size, you know, tiny little fish, the bio load seems to be smaller. And I'm not entirely sure how that's going to go in the long term. I've seen, and I even did an experiment with a Wallstad like Pico tank and half a gallon with a shrimp, and it did well for quite a while, but I didn't feel like there were enough nutrients for the plants after a while. Once the initial nutrient load from the dirted, you know, substrate kind of gave out, that wasn't quite enough. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes if you have enough nutrients in the long term. In terms of making sure the shrimp do well, you are right about the mutts. If you have Neocaridina genus in there and there are different shrimp, you're almost certainly going to get hybrids, and they're not going to be very pretty. Unfortunately, they're most likely going to end up a hodgepodge or maybe even revert to the wild type. And I've kept a lot of the wild type shrimp before. The Neocaridina will just wild cherries, they're sometimes called, but they're not red, they're just, you know, shrimpy color. And that's probably what you're going to get, because they will hybridize, or even if they're the same species, the morphs will mix, and you'll get, because a lot of them are based on recessive genes, and so when you mix them, you'll get the dominant genes coming out again. You'll see them. So anyway, that's probably what's going to happen. I would actually suggest picking one color per closely related group or species, and you may be able to put two or three different types of shrimp in there, as long as they're not closely related. But you're going to have to separate them if you want to keep the colors bright. But hopefully it'll work out. Keep in mind the bit about the nutrient load, the bio load, and the nutrients for the plants, and let us know how it goes. But I wish you the best of luck.
Yeah.
And thank you to all you aquariumaxers out there for joining us. May the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquariumax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquariumax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquariumax.com.